Hello and welcome back to Bricks and Banner, the only show with real talk from the custom LEGO community. I'm your host as always, Billy, and before we get into it, I want to remind you that on our Instagram page, bricks_and_banter, I upload a wrap-up post with every episode that has some images related to the discussion we had. So if you're feeling lost or want the reference pictures to something, it's likely on there. And hey, while you're there, be sure to repost that onto your story and get the word out about the podcast, or share it with a friend. I bet if you enjoy this show, you know others who would like it as well. And so with all that out of the way, I'm very excited to introduce this week's guest. He is someone frequently requested to appear on the podcast. He has taken the Star Wars community by storm the past few years, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that he is now the head of a clone customizing empire. That's right, this episode's guest is Andrew from AV Figures. We had an exciting talk about how he got started in the community, what it's been like growing AV Figures, future plans of expansion, and so much more. So no further ado, please enjoy our conversation. I'm here with Andrew Vu, the CEO, founder, creator of AV Figures. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Like I said, I'm actually really excited to have you on the podcast.
Glad to be here.
Been a fan of your work for a long time, and even though I'm not super involved with the Star Wars community particularly, your company's always been of a lot of interest in seeing what the new stuff you come out with. So excited to, you know, take a bit of a deep dive and learn a lot more about you.
Yeah, I'm an open book, so you know, I'm here to answer any questions and hopefully have a great conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, just getting into it, we could start off in typical fashion of how you got introduced to more so the third party or customizing scene of LEGO.
Oh yeah. Let me go fast backward in my mind real quick. I was lurking around the custom community since 2010, I want to say. I was when I was 10 years old, little 10-year-old Andrew was like, all I care about is Pokemon. And you know, like don't get me wrong, Pokemon's still great, but
absolutely,
I had no interest in Star Wars and in military and anything remotely created related to the things that we create today. And then my buddy in class was like, hey, the Clone Wars is on tonight. You should watch it. I'm like, what the heck is a Clone Wars? And then, I watched it, season one, episode five, Rookies. It was, and I saw Clone Troopers for the first time. I'm like, yo, this is really cool. I went into a deep dive, and I saved up for the ATTE set, which was out back then. And then I was like, oh great, now I want to make some of these other clones that we're seeing in the show, and I couldn't, and so you know, I didn't want to go do the Sharpie thing yet. I didn't have the confidence for that. But then I saw all these guys on Euro Bricks and all these other, like Flickr and especially mock pages, these guys posting photos of their custom clone troopers. I was like, what the heck? And then sometime in 2011, Area Light posted a photo of his pad printed custom clone helmets, and I never thought that I needed something more than that in my life. At the time, I was like, mom, can we get this? And she's like, what the heck is
it's
that?
Not a want, it's a need.
It's a need. I was like, I would die without it. So yeah. You know, on the day that Area Light posted it, that's the day I stopped lurking, and I made a Flickr account, and I started engaging with the Flickr community. Granted, I had nothing to share at the time, but you know, this is at the time where, like, you know, MGF Customs and JPO 1997, these customizers from way back in the day, they were like making custom clones and stuff. And then Area Light shook up the whole third party community with these pad printed helmets, and that's really how I got started, honestly. Just seeing these guys custom work, and I was like, I need this in my life.
Wow. Okay. I find it almost ironic. Did you that you wouldn't have sharpied clones? Did you once you gained the confidence? Did you take your hand at that? Or
oh yeah, I sacrificed many a clone after that. I actually before I even sharpied, I tried to paint. But I didn't know what the different paints were. So I all I had was my old watercolor set from like first grade that I never threw away. And if you've ever taken watercolor to Lego, you're either a god among men, or it just ends up really badly.
Or you don't know what you're doing.
In my case, it was the latter. And I thought like, wow, paint sucks. I'm never gonna do this. How does MGF do that? But then I never touched paint. But I saw my mom's. She had gel pens, and she had Sharpies.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, all right, let's do this. And I Sharpied up like a Commander Gree, and I looked at it. There was so much pride in that Commander Gree figure.
Yeah, simpler times.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So got your Aerial Light order. Where'd you kind of go from there?
When I was looking at Aerial Light and I saw his Delta Squad, I was like, who are those guys? I was still very new to Star Wars, so I didn't know what the Delta Squad was or Clone Commandos, and they quickly became my my obsession within the community. And then, you know, I saw these guys uploading photos of decals that they had designed. Someone made a commando template. And I thought that the commandos were like the coolest clone troopers in the world. So from there, I was like, I want to make my own commando squad. So I got Microsoft Paint and I started editing these like super low resolution decals that you could count the pixels on. And I just like started editing my clone design that I had in my mind pixel by pixel. And then yeah, from there, that's where it really started kicking off, because like I made probably three different clone commando squad designs before I finally was happy with the one that I landed on. And then I'd also been saving up my lunch money and stuff. And I was like, I reached out to Tyler at Clone Army Customs. I was like, hey, I want to have this commando squad made. I called them the Shadow Squad. And at the time, I was really inspired by stop motions. So I wanted to make a stop motion out of this custom commando squad that I called the Shadow Squad. And then Tyler was like, yeah, I'll make these for you. Can I sell them on my site? I was like, dude, yes, of course. And, you know, a couple of months later, he cranked out the designs. I couldn't have been happier with them. And there's even a point where when Tyler had the Shadow Squad on his site, there was a little tidbit in the description that says designed by Andrew Vu. And then my friends at school were like, dude, you're on Clone Army Custom site. I was like, that oh shit, amazing. I am.
We made it. Mom, get the camera.
Yeah, and I don't know if Tyler was aware at the time, but I was like, I was like in middle school, elementary school, or something at the time. So I was like, just this little kid, being featured on his site, and I thought it was the biggest honor ever. I still think it's an honor, honestly.
Yeah, no, that is huge, and I definitely one other guest I was just recording with recently, they mentioned that it's funny that if you just use proper grammar on the internet, you can kind of get away with seeming way older than you are.
Oh, dude.
And everyone will just mistake you as an adult. So, yeah, that might have played into this.
And when you don't use proper grammar, you immediately get assumed you're like 12 or something.
Yeah. So there's no telling how old he thought you were if you were carrying yourself well over the internet.
Yeah. I wonder if I still have that old email thread, because, like, That would be a trip down memory lane, but I won't go into that right now. Anyway,
yeah, that'd be sick. So you had him produce the decals. I'm assuming you continued to make more decal designs. What kind of got you into producing decals yourself, or is that too big a jump?
That is a bit of a jump, but I mean, I can fill in the gaps, I guess.
Yeah.
There. Please. So you know, I got those designs from Tyler, and I was like, this is awesome. And I was hooked. I wanted to make more. I wanted to build an army of clones. And Lego wasn't going to make Commander Bly. Lego wasn't going to make, you know, like Commander Trauma and all these other clones that we see like in the early seasons. So, it was a hobby of mine just designing the different clones that you see over the seasons, but onto my template. Now, back then, I didn't know the difference between like phase one and phase two until they actually rolled out phase two clone troopers in the show. And which is basically just like a different armor style that happens like between episode two and three. Over time I kind of kept refining it more and more. It was just really nice to see some of these designs that I knew Lego would never make, and I didn't really want to pay for a custom figure to be made. And it was a good hobby that just lasted until about 20. I think starting in 2013 is when someone first reached out to me and said, "Hey, I like your decal. Do you sell the decals?" I'm like, I've never sold the decal, but if you want it, sure. Selling decals here and there was like very, very sparse. There were few people who even knew how to apply water slide decals. It wasn't until about 2018, which there's a lot of stuff that happened in between, but 2018 is when I decided, like, you know what, I'm just going to turn this into a business and I'm going to start selling the decals.
Wow, okay, yeah.
But until then, it was mostly just like I produced it for myself and people liked it enough where they said, "Hey, can I buy a set?" And every now and then, mm-hmm. I'd ship out some decals or some figures to people who, you know, contacted me on Flickr mail way back in the day when that was still a thing.
So did you get your own printer to start printing these, or were you still sort of outsourcing it in the meantime?
I've never outsourced printing decals, but back then all I had was my mom's printer. There's a lot of people who don't realize this, but I mean, decal printing can be done on practically any printer. You have to do your research about, like, you know, which decal paper brands work well. There's two different types of printers, so there's also two different types of paper that you can be getting. All this stuff was just like, I had this old laser printer that my mom used every now and then, but for the most part, just kind of sat idle. So I told mom, like, "Hey, mom, can I take this to my room?" And then from there, I just started printing decals all the time.
Is there like any considerations with like resolution of the printer?
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Just using like a, so you could find like upgraded models or something that have better resolution, or how does that?
Yeah, out? Yeah. With most printers, I'll try not to get overcomplicated, but there's two different types of printers. There are laser printers, and then there are inkjet printers. Inkjet has a higher resolution. The only issue is that when you print decals through an inkjet printer, you have to use a clear coat sealant to seal the ink to the decal sheet before you even cut it out and apply it.
I see.
So okay. you get a much higher resolution and less graininess, less pixels, but you have you also have to keep in mind that the decals are going to be thicker because of that clear coat. With lasers, the only things that are super high resolution is pure black, pure cyan, magenta, and yellow, which are like the four primary colors of a printing.
Right.
And it's very rare that you'll have a design that uses pure yellow unless you want it to look like a highlighter. Or magenta or cyan. But with pure black, it's specifically with if your document that you print is in a specific color mode, that's when you get really high resolution black. I realize I'm kind of rambling a little bit about technicalities stuff.
It is interesting. Those are both like titles you hear for printer. To be talking about printers, like, it's just standard office equipment.
Yeah.
Um,
it,
But yeah, no, that is interesting to be able to apply those for the Lego hobby.
Yeah, right? I mean, but you know, back to your question, I mean, even within the lasers and inkjets, there are some that are like that are higher in resolution than others. Usually, in when you talk about screen resolution, you know, with like monitors and phones, you have an aspect ratio and pixels by pixels. But in the printer world, you use what's called DPI, which is dots per inch. Because whenever you print something, all you're printing is just a whole bunch of dots really closely put together to simulate color. So when you have a high DPI printer, which are usually more expensive, you get better looking decals.
All right, yeah, totally makes sense. Also, one random thought I was having when you were first describing using MS Paint and like the decal renders were just super high pixel.
Oh, yeah.
It would actually almost be a pretty charming design to have like an 8-bit or 16-bit clone trooper decal.
Actually, just, like... on that note, in April of 2021, for April Fools, we released what we called the Quality Trooper, but we spelled it like K-W-A-L-I-T. And we purposely like deep fried the crap out of our decal, so it's super, super pixely. And we made it look like it had a faded print and everything. That was hilarious.
I love that idea. I did something similar where I just took I was gifted like knockoff third party military parts, like figures. Cause somebody knew I was into this, they're like, oh my god, I found this. And I was like, Thank you. And April Fool's Day a couple years ago, I just took a photo, raised up like all the saturation. the sharpness of the photo is just super blown out.
Oh my god. Kinda like a like those old like Call of Duty one clip edits where like it's over edited, basically.
Yes. Do you have plans for this this year's April Fools?
Oh yeah. I don't wanna say what it is because I feel like we're gonna touch on the topic later in the podcast. So I won't say what it is, but we do have plans for April Fools, and I think it's kind of humorous, but at the same time would actually be beneficial for the community.
Okay, awesome. I actually should mention this will be posted after April Fool's Day. So if you want to discuss it, I won't leak it if you wanted that out there. But if you still don't feel comfortable discussing that, that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this will be posted.
If this is scheduled for after April 1st, then I'll say it then.
21. It should be the 4th. This will come out.
Sure.
Yeah, so what's the plans for April 1st?
Yeah, so for April 1st, you know, we pride ourselves a lot on having this like really hyper detailed clone trooper template. We spent years refining the design, and it's got details on the front and back and the left and the right and wraparound arms and everything like that. But there's a certain charm to official Lego clones. You know, they just print on the front and the back of the torso, solid colored arms, some leg printing and some helmet printing. Particularly there's like a fan favorite among the custom Star Wars community is 2014's Lego template for the clone troopers. So for April 1st, we were going to go like, oh yeah, you know what? We just decided that we don't want to do 360 wraparound decals anymore. And we're just going to switch to like front and back decals. And we're just going to drop like a couple dozen, you know, really popular designs in the Lego style. But not just, you know, the 2014 template, but like all the different clone templates that we've seen over the years. And then on April 2nd, we were just not going to take the products down. And we're just going to say, you know what? Yeah. Anyway, we're going to keep this and we're going to keep making these things because people really do like the official Lego stuff, and it goes well with the official clones. So for people who like to collect an army build and stuff, it's a great way so that their collection looks consistent. But it also is a you know, quick prank, like, hey, we're no longer going to be doing our signature product. Huh, smile.
No, it's a great way to unveil a product like that. And there really is a charm to having something that's in a simpler style. We get too obsessed with if we can, then, you know, if we should sometimes. Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. But not to say that the fully wrapped figures don't look incredible.
Thank you.
But
But yeah, I mean, like, I definitely think that on that note, I hope you don't mind if I go on a quick tangent here.
No, go ahead.
I love Lego's design language, and to a certain extent, my designers and I try to emulate Lego's design language as much as we can, just, you know, translate it to a wraparound template and stuff. And there are reasons why Lego's design template in particular looks so clean, even though they have a limited palette to work with. And you know, they have to work within the artistic limitations of a Lego figure. But like something that I have noticed a lot is there's kind of some animosity within the Lego community, the custom Lego Star Wars community in particular, where you have these different templates that are created by these different artists, and all of them are great in their own right. But then you'll have some animosity between people, like, oh, this template's better, no, that template's better, and you'll have people who argue that, you know, the Lego template's better, or the Clone Army Customs one, or AV figures and whatnot. And I like, personally, I own clones from almost every different like clone customizer, because I, as a collector, I like seeing the variety. So that I'm a I, that's what makes me a little bit apprehensive about making Lego style decals, is that everyone else, or not everyone, but a lot of people already do that in the market.
I see.
And it's not that I think that we wouldn't do it justice. It's more like it's already been done, and the artist in me is like, move on to something new. Don't do something that's like, you know, don't beat a dead horse or whatever. But
I appreciate that kind of perspective. It annoys me. It irks me to see a lot of brands kind of just rehash things that are already well established in the community without necessarily good reason to improve upon it.
yeah,
So.
that's one of my big things too. It's like, if you're gonna do something that's already been done, like at least try to, you know, improve it. Like when we started our military line, there are so many different companies who make, you know, custom M4s in Lego scale. So I was like, when I throw my stuff into the mix, you know, I wanted there to be, you know, something a little bit more to it. So I just tried to make it as detailed as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it certainly fits a its own niche in the market. Going back to Lego sort of design language and working on the minifigure as like a template and a palette, what do you find is the most difficult thing to sort of translate from like typical body proportions into the Lego style?
Specifically for body proportions, I think one of the hardest parts is the thighs in particular. When you're designing something, like I don't know if you ever like really like closely looked at, you know, like Lego figures and tried to analyze, like, oh, this should be a knee, this should be the elbow, this should, yeah. But like if you look at a Lego figure, like it's almost as if they're like if you glued your thighs together and that's it, that is a Lego figure. So you know, like it's especially funny when you try to do designs with like straps on the thighs. Like, let's say you have a holster, like and that holster has a strap that wraps around the thigh. It's very common in Star Wars and military that you see that kind of thing. You have to cut off that strap design, like right at the crotch of the Lego figure. We call it the crotch. It's like the vertical part of the hip piece. And if you don't do it right, it just looks awkward. It can look awkward either way, actually. But you know, sometimes like they would have all like a bunch of detail on the thigh, but the thigh is so much shorter, like proportionally, on a Lego figure than it is, you know, to an actual person. And the same goes for the shin too. Like a lot of that when we made our our first military figs, we made two templates. We made the G4 Cry suit, and then a Gorka. And there were a lot of details on the legs that I literally just couldn't fit in there without it looking like a hot mess of just black lines. So yeah, definitely, like I would say just legs in general, really, but specifically thighs. It's really hard to kind of compromise. You know, what details do you leave in? What details do you leave out? How do you scale it so that it doesn't look stupid? Things like that.
Yeah, the silhouette of the minifigure, when you just kind of look at it and cross your eyes and just like abstract, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It looks like a person. Mm-hmm. And then once you dissect it, it's like, what is this leg? It's just,
yeah.
Why is it bent out like this? Where is this hip coming from?
But on that note too, actually, this issue still translates even into like weapon design. We're like, yeah, you know, if you've definitely owned multiple different of the same weapon from different companies. Let's just take an mm-hmm. M4 for instance, right? I think that the Tiny Tactical M4 is scaled perfectly.
Much smaller,
but it is yeah. smaller
than Brick
yeah,
Arms.
Brick Arms is right. a little yeah. larger. Combat Brick. I'm not sure if Combat Brick does an M4, but I know Minifig Cat does several. The Minifig Cat ones are kind of large, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Combat Bricks. I think they have a 416, and that one looks really big, in my opinion.
Between Combat Brick and Minifig Cat. Their weapons are super hit or miss. It's either scaled perfectly or it's not even necessarily large. It's just extremely awkwardly proportioned.
Yeah, and that's a...
Stocks end up being too long, and then, like, it's just weird.
Yeah, and, you know, like, and I don't mean to say anything bad about these brands, because I've purchased from all of them back when I used to make a lot of military customs, which I miss doing.
I want to get into that too, yeah.
And you know, like I find bits and pieces from each of the brands that I would love to, like, I would chop it up and I'd make mods and stuff like that. But like scaling is such a hard thing, because if you look at even a Tiny Tactical M4, if you put the gun vertically, it sits about the height of the minifigure's shoulder. You know, the Brick Arms ones and the other brands, they extend a little bit past the shoulder. And if you were to hold a rifle like that, IRL, that's longer or taller than you, basically,
it'd be extremely unwieldy.
Yeah, like even yeah. even some snipers, like, you know, they don't even go up to like your chest, you know. So scaling weaponry and helmets and stuff is a big issue with designing things for Lego. But we try our best to mm-hmm. kind of make what we think would, you know, fit well with our design language and Legos, and me and my team have kind of settled on a nice little like in between area where it's more detailed than Lego, but not so far deviated from the way that Lego would do it if they had you know the budget to do this kind of detail.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely a dance to it, and yeah. No, each has their pros and cons. It's great to see the variety though, mm-hmm. and I'm glad to see that's a focus for you. Speaking on the designs again, and you mentioning that you have a team, I mean, this, we're kind of just down the rabbit hole now at this point, yeah. but what was it like once you had this business going and you had to expand into taking on more members onto a team? Was it difficult to sort of like give up the reins to the designing, or was that really a great experience to help grow?
I would definitely say it was the latter. I didn't find it. Okay. Actually, hold on a second. All right. Let me. Okay. So when we first started taking on team members, I, for lack of a better term, I didn't vet our team members very well. Most of the people who we brought onto the team were excellent people. They had a good head on their shoulders and stuff like that. But some of the other people that we had on our team were, let's say, less than friendly with their intents. So I've been very protective of my clone template because that's practically what I've been working on since I was like 11 years old. You know, I finally brought it to the market, and I'm like, okay, I have, you know, I already saw people who are like, you know, scanning and tracing our design, and I get, like, you know, I don't own the intellectual property of Clone Troopers, but as an artist, I'd spend a lot of time researching it and trying to perfect it and you know, refine the template. So and there's a million
it's not easy to see that just, you know, go to waste with people taking advantage of
it. Yeah, so one of our team members who said that he wanted to do design work for me, I was a little apprehensive about it at first. So I'm like, you know, this guy's creative, so let's see what he does. He didn't make any designs for us, and he took all of our files, ran off, and started his own company, basically.
Unreal.
Yeah, so I was real pissed about that. But I mean, shortly after, you know, I hired in other people who were talented designers, trusted community members, and they were well vetted. You interviewed one of them, Gideon. He's the guy who introduced us. And Gideon's made excellent designs. So in being able to rely on other team members to not only carry out the designs for Clone Troopers to the level of detail that we're looking for, but also to bring their own ideas to the table, it's honestly incredible. Because then, as a company, I can talk about, like, oh, we as a design team produced this, not just me. So I find it really fun to push things that are a team effort rather than just like, you know, oh, I made this. Granted, like, I also enjoy making things myself. So being able to have team members that I can count on who can do a lot of this work has freed me up to do a lot of work that, you know, I want to work on, which is great.
Yeah, that's really one of the most important aspects of expanding, because there's only one you. So you need to find what work you can delegate to others to help you achieve what you're going to do. You know, kind of speaking on that you need that extra time. I'm sure it's something you think about a lot. But getting the time to just sit there and customize for yourself outside of the business must be difficult to manage. But back in the day on Flickr, you were sincerely one of my favorite customizers. You really did it all. You had the decal work, the sculpting, the painting, all of that. Is that something you feel like you'd ever get back to someday?
I really want to. And I appreciate, by the way, thank you that you liked my work even like way back then. You know, I have this stockpile of at least like $500 worth of Tiny Tactical stuff that,
oh goodness,
I haven't touched it because I haven't had time to work on it. There's like, I just have this box of you know, like guns and pouches and resin casts and from G-Bricks, and then all these accessories that I just haven't touched yet because I haven't had time to, you know, go in and paint it up. But I wouldn't be holding on to it if I didn't want to work with it again. So it really does just kind of boil down to time, because when you're working for like 8 to 10 hours a day, and then by the end of the day your brain's just kind of fried.
With Lego, no less.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, people think like, oh, you work with Lego all day, must be fun. It can be, but it's also stressful. Work is work. But you know, your brain's just kind of fried, so all you want to do is kind of just kick back. And I think that customizing, if your brain's fried, it's going to be difficult to make a good custom. Especially when you need to have like, you need to be very attentive when you're trying to paint really fine details and stuff. So, I just kind of feel like if I had a little less time spent like on the business and you know, a couple days off where I could customize things, that would be nice.
Right. How did you get first interested in the military customs?
I'm trying to think back on that. You know, it probably was just okay, I remember. When I was in seventh grade, I'd never touched the Call of Duty game. And not that I didn't like it, it was more like my mom didn't want me to play games with guns.
Relatable.
Yeah. Is she,
I look how I turn out now.
I almost said an inappropriate joke. anyway, with my friend got Call of Duty, and I went over to his house, and I had a great time playing it with him. Asked my mom, can I get COD? And she's like, no. My mom was away most of the time because she also ran a business back then. So I was home by myself a lot, and I was like, you know what? Well, some of my other friends are playing this free-to-play online shooter game called Project Blackout. I don't know if you ever heard of that game.
No, I actually haven't.
It's, in my opinion, it was one of the funnest gameplay games I've ever played. Like the gameplay was actually smooth.
This is PC?
It was PC only.
Yeah.
When I say free to play, I actually mean pay to win. This is
Of
this
course,
is
of course.
before people started like molding at EA for their pay to win stuff, and EA is the one that did it on a very large scale. But Project Blackout, although also known as Point Blank when it was originally published, and then it changed owners like three times and changed names like three times. But when I started playing, it was Project Blackout, and they had all these really cool guns. Particularly, one of the my favorite gun in the game at the time was the Sig 550. And they had like this really cool camo design on it. And I was like, wow, no one makes this gun in Lego. And you know, I whenever I really deep dive into characters or character models that I really like, I have this urge to make it in Lego. It was a lot easier to do that back when I had more time, but I made this dude from Project Blackout, and then I tried to modify a gun for it, which was, did not really end up that well. But from there, I was like, yo, this is just a whole new avenue of customs to pursue. So eventually, my mom let me buy a Call of Duty game. I got into Battlefield, and I saw like all the different guns that they had then at that time as well. And then I saw, you know, like Tiny Tacticals working on their stuff. Brick Arms had really cool things. Minifig Cat had lots of guns. And from there, I just started to really like the look of the military stuff. And sometime around 2013, 2014, I got in contact with an old Flickr community member who's no longer around, but he went by JPO in 1997. And we would talk a lot, and he was an active airsofter, so I wanted to get into airsoft as well. But you know, he and I would talk for hours on end, and I kind of got into the airsoft scene for a while, and we were so I basically like my entire, I guess, exposure to the military community was mostly games and airsoft, which is kind of a surface.
I'd say it's typical for most,
Yeah,
though.
it was surface level knowledge, but like it was enough for me to make like a pretty cool, you know, military figure without knowing too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, it was really great to see you expand, now that you have your own company and started working on some military designs. A couple months back, when we were first planning to, we were amping up to record this, would have been in tandem with your military
Oh man.
release. And I don't say that to be to make you feel bad. It's been a long time in the making, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah.
I was super excited to see all those designs coming out, and I quite liked all of them. They certainly were a lot more realistic than my typical style, but more options is more options. I'll take that every day, right? And the printed designs are great, and having all those decal sheets was really sweet. I bought some, and I have yet to use them because decaling is so there's a mental barrier I have to personally overcome before I bust out the decal sheets.
Honestly, I
But
totally get it.
yeah, so one day, hopefully, because I really liked the Gorka legs, and to have be able to have the option to sort of throw those on any color. I think there's a lot to do there. So, but disappointingly, I don't feel like I've seen a lot of people adopting it and making customs with it. Like, I was so excited for all the splicing for people to put in that work, so I could just enjoy as a third party and not have to do the
Yeah.
work of splicing the decals. But how do you feel like the military release went for you guys?
It was really good. It received much more positive reception than I was expecting, which is great because I was honestly expecting a lot of people to be like, oh, you're just knocking off Tiny Tactical. And you know, to a certain extent, I mean, I like yes, Tiny Tactical releases highly detailed stuff and, you know, accessories for their guns and pouches and vests and stuff. And it's a little difficult not to think about Tiny Tactical anytime someone releases, you know, accessories like that.
Right.
I think I had like only one or two comments like that. But for the most part, people were excited for it, and I was very happy because people were acknowledging the unique differences in our designs rather than, you know, ragging on the fact that, oh, this has already been done. You know, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where if you're going to make something, at least try to like add something to what's already existing on the market. So try to make it a little more detailed, put my artistic style into it. So onto your original question, the release went well, and it's definitely something I've wanted to revisit again. It's more so like, because we have a production timeline, I can't always just just crank out something new whenever I want to, not without moving a bunch of things around and pausing projects that are already in progress or things like that.
Of course.
But right. But we are working on, I'm hoping to get a July 4th release for our next like military expansion stuff.
Oh, that'll be great.
I've been talking a lot with one of the military community members, GH Brick. We've been chatting on Discord a lot. He's been giving me a lot of insight on, what's currently trending in the tactical and the military community, the kind of things that we haven't seen in LEGO yet, the kind of things that we have seen but could be improved, suggestions on good products and stuff. So I'm really thankful for his insight on that.
Yeah, that's great. That's exactly what you kind of need, approaching this, this section of the community.
Yeah.
And just one more point on the decals. What was so great with you releasing, in addition to the printed designs, was all these alternatives, that alternative camos and stuff, that it would have been impractical for companies to make like full production runs of, but it's just great to have those odd or more niche designs just available now.
Yeah.
In a much more accessible way that doesn't, you know, hinder you much because it's a relatively low cost, but brings all these options to the community is great.
I think that's one thing. You mentioned that you hadn't really seen a lot of people do the decals for them, which I'm pretty sure that like with the custom Star Wars community, most people are familiar with decals by now and have tried it at some point. Within the military community, there were only ever like one or two people who ever did military decals and sold them. And so for most people in the military community, it's about like you have a printed figure as a base, you glue accessories to it, or you sculpt it and paint it, but decaling is not something very common in the military community.
Yeah, it is really foreign. And if it ever is in the military community, it's more so for like the army builders who are making historical scenes. And even that's pretty much kind of dead in terms of them using decals. They much more opt for printed accessories.
Yeah, especially when you have like a lot of companies who output like really good and historically accurate, like troopers and stuff like that, and units and everything. So it's definitely easier to have a printed figure as a base rather than apply all the decals and then put all your accessories on and then make your loadout and things like that. Right. But I'm as you said, like I'm also glad that the option is there, because there are a lot of people who have shown really talented splicing abilities within the clone space, and I've still yet to see like a really intricate splice with our military decals, but I know someone out there is capable of it. It's just a matter of them finding the motivation to do it and then it getting circulated around the community.
I think it could be interesting splicing even the clones together with some of those camo designs.
Oh, yeah.
There's potential there as
well. Yeah. On that note, actually, sorry, I totally, I don't know if I was cutting you off in the middle of a train of thought.
No, not at all.
I forget the original artist, but there's a guy who does like these like military clone trooper hybrid like drawings on DeviantArt. And I always thought it was so cool. Like there was like a, one of them, he had like a phase two clone trooper with night vision goggles.
I'm sure I've probably seen these around.
He had a plate carrier and everything, and like there was another really cool one where it was like a Star Wars weapon with like real world optics and accessories on it, which I thought was super cool. But later down the line, crossover things like that are something that I definitely want to explore. Because we have, you know, we have the military design, we have the clone troopers. It's not out of the question to do a crossover and make like a military Star Wars helmet or design or things like that.
Yeah, that could be really sick. What I liked was the, in terms of like collaboration with artists that have these sort of niche mashup designs, but are just so, so well done that they can't help but be loved by the community. Mm-hmm. I don't recall the artist's name, but the work you were doing with the artist who made the clones that had like a fantasy knight sort of element to them.
Oh, yeah. Jake Bartok. He's the guy who made the clone knights.
Yeah, those are really interesting. And to see sort of a collaboration come with somebody who's totally outside of the community, but bring their niche into it as well is really cool.
I agree. Yeah, it was an honor to work with Jake. And I don't say that like lightly because he was approached by multiple people at the same time. And then he said like, yeah, you can do it. I was like, oh yes, thank you.
Right. I recalled kind of seeing that there was not to get into beef or anything, but yeah, it was a little scandalous. There were some moments.
Yeah. There. I didn't expect it to be like an exclusive production right thing either. And if he decides that he wants to, you know, like allow other people to produce it, I'm more than happy to see it. But yeah, I was really excited that we had the ability to produce that, because I keep seeing the Clone Knights on Instagram and stuff, and people are loving it.
Yeah, no, it needed to be made. You guys did it great justice.
Thank you.
How did you guys start to get into resin printing work like that?
Truthfully, so it's really weird to describe this guy. His name is Jake. Jake is he's one of my oldest friends. We go back to like when I was in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. We've been friends for a long time. Eventually he started working for us and also living with us. So he's
oh, wow.
I didn't know if I should introduce him as my best friend, my housemate, my employee, because he's all of them.
my schoolmate. It's just like he checks all of the boxes.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, he was interested in creating of all things like custom pens.
Oh wow!
The pen spinning, modding, and creating community is just as diverse as the Lego community. At some
oh, pen spinning! I wasn't even considering that. That's
yeah.
Sick.
There are people who like 3D model and attach like different things at the
weights,
end of their pens. Yeah,
right?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But he was like, oh, I had this pen design in my mind and I wanted to make it, so I bought this resin printer. I was like, you bought a resin printer? And it was just chilling in our garage for a while. And you know, when he wasn't working on it, I was like, hey, can I play around with that? And I printed a clone helmet on it. I was like, whoa, the resolution is incredible. Like my entire understanding of 3D printing prior to that was, you know, you melt the plastic and you spit out a noodle, which was not fine enough for Lego scale.
Yeah.
But then, you know, resin printing started, like it really changed things, especially when you had the stuff that Custom Brick Builder was making and Nate's Minifigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, what if we did that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so what got me into it?
Thanks, Jake.
Yeah, it's just Jake. it's all thanks to Jake.
No, because I was thinking back to the military release, and I almost forgot it because I was talking up the designs. But you had released some the vest, the fast helmet, which went out of stock before I could purchase one.
Yeah,
which that's a testament to just I was there like only 10 minutes after release, and it was going already. So, you know, props to you. You guys, I'm sure you produced many, and you guys restocked them too.
Yeah.
I've gotten one now, but
thankfully everything's been able to stay in stock now. Hopefully we can produce a lot so it doesn't sell out upon release for our next wave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's it like now that you kind of established a resale community alongside, I mean, not inadvertently fostered a resale community just because of the exclusivity or old parts that people can't get anymore?
You know,
it must be sort of surreal to see that kind of exist.
As an artist, it's flattering that people would pay so much for my work. And as a business, we don't make any profit off of anyone doing your reselling, but it's kind of interesting to see the different dynamics of, like, some people buy just to resell, some people buy to hold on to it and watch it accumulate in value, other people buy it because they genuinely want it. And I used to be a lot more involved with trying to control the resale community, because there were a lot of people who were like, hey, like, I really wanted this, and this guy just bought it to scalp it. Like, you got to do something to stop it. And, you know, back then I would do things like order limits, like only one per person, things like that. But I want to say that we've gotten to a point now where we can release something, and there's enough stock that we produce where it doesn't sell out instantly, so we don't need to, like, regulate things anymore. And even then, like being a quote unquote policeman was kind of a hassle. But my thoughts on the like how I feel about the resale community is that I think that it's, in any collecting space, I kind of feel like the resale community is a necessary evil. Because these are people who will hold on to something even if they don't want it, because they know it has value. And way later down the line, when someone wants an old exclusive, more than likely someone's got it. You know, things are exclusive, people will want them later down the line. But, you know, I'm not going to produce any more of it. So I think that the resale community is kind of a necessary evil. Even if some of the prices are a little extortionist, it at least leaves the option for people to get some of these older exclusives.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. It really shows the health of a company, and it's sort of the lifeblood to keep things sort of active, whether you like it or not, because sometimes they really can be excruciatingly high, and it's unfortunate to see stuff like that go down. But it keeps people active, trying to continue to acquire the product or engage with the entity itself. And, you know,
yeah, because at the end of the day, like, from a business perspective, we don't profit directly from resale, but you have customers who really want our product, and the fact that they're willing to spend so much on, you know, older exclusives means that, you know, these guys are likely to become loyal customers. So we continue to make newer exclusives that we hope that they'll continue to buy. From a personal perspective, I've experienced things where I really wanted something, sold out immediately, had to buy it for like twice the price from a scalper. So I've been on both sides of the coin, and I guess you can say that my feelings on it are kind of neutral, because I understand why the resale community exists. I also understand that, you know, once I sell it to them, it's they can do what they want with it.
Yeah, it's theirs.
So
yeah,
if they want to sell it for more, it's not my responsibility to tell them they can't, nor is it my right. So yeah, I mean, I'm overall pretty neutral about it.
Are there any other themes you plan to expand into?
Oh yeah,
outside of like Star Wars military.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Just recently I picked up a pad printer.
Whoa. This is... Okay. Oh yeah, I believe I saw that you posted on Instagram. Yeah. If I
this is to me this is like the final frontier for customizing Lego. I kind of feel like I've tried every customizing technique under the sun: 3D printing, 3D modeling, painting, decaling, even like UV printing, and now we're going to do pad printing, which is really exciting. But pad printing in particular unlocks so many closed doors for production, because with UV printing, most companies will only print on like the side of the arm, because that's all the UV printer can physically reach in one pass. We are able to get the UV printer to wrap around all sides of the arm. It takes three times the amount of work, but it looks good. But the thing is that we're limited to to what we can do, because you have to have a design that seamlessly meshes from front to side to back. And it has to, like, it has to blend over three passes and be perfectly aligned, you know, within acceptable margins. But that's really difficult to do for something like if I were to do a t-shirt, right? Just a regular t-shirt, and I got like a light nougat arm, and I wanted to print a black t-shirt sleeve on it. I have to print on the front and the side and the back, and, you know, I'll print a t-shirt. If I wanted to do a flannel design, I have to make a front, side, and back design file for the arm. And I had to also make sure that it meshes really well together, which can be very difficult for some designs. So with pad printing, you can design it and stamp the design on, and it'll wrap around the arm, and super easy. So you don't have those limitations of UV printing. And so with that said, there's a lot of different things that we want to create that from various figures from games that we like, to different TV shows. I don't want to attempt Marvel stuff again until I can do the full wraparound pad printed arm, because there's so many details in the arm that I feel like the character is just lacking without it. So as I mentioned, I do want to get into more video games. One of my favorite ones that I play is Apex Legends.
Oh, sweet. I just got into that because of my friends.
Nice. Yeah, me and my friends who also work for me in the workshop, we play Apex like pretty regularly. And Jake's been bugging me. He's like, when are we going to make a Wraith figure? When are we going to make a Wraith figure? Because he's a Wraith main. And I'm like, we're getting there. Let me just pad print first. Other genres include, you know, video games. And then a big one, which is a personal favorite for me, is anime. I know, like, anime is like hit or miss for a lot of people. Understandably so, because that's a whole rabbit hole that is hit or miss. But there are a lot of anime shows that I'm interested in, that I'd like to create, Lego figures for, especially because in America, it's a widely untapped market.
Yeah, absolutely. The only anime figures I can recall are produced overseas.
Actually, I think almost all of them are just produced overseas. It's weird. There's like the way that me and some of my team members put it is that it's almost like there's a secret collective of like custom Lego printing companies over in like the Hong Kong area, where like they can just randomly chuck out these insanely high quality figures, either with UV printing or pad printing, with injection molded parts and everything like that.
Yeah, in unbelievable injection molded parts, stuff like you wouldn't even consider to make, and it's unreal what they do.
And on top of that too, like what baffles me is that they can do these injection molded parts in small runs and still be profitable.
Right. Right. I don't know.
to anyone who is familiar with producing high quality injection molded parts, that shit costs an arm and a leg.
Yeah, just to get the molds going.
And it's, then you have minimum order quantities. You know, like I'm not allowed to buy any of our injection molded helmets unless I buy 1,000 or more. So so it's like for them, they're like, oh yeah, it's a limited run of like 60 figures. And it's like, it's got injection molded hair, custom blasters, custom like weapons.
Yeah, we're talking like five different custom injection molded elements.
And like wraparound pad printing, like on the arms and the legs and stuff.
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, granted, the figures do retail for like $100, yeah, but it's still.
And knowing the production process behind it, I get it. But I mean, like, if you have like a limited quantity of like 100 of them and you sell for $100, that's like what, $10,000? That's the cost of a mold right there. I mean, right. unless you are the factory who does the molding, which I assume that they own a factory of sorts so that they can do the molding for cheaper. But but yeah, so anime figures is something I definitely want to get into. But, you know, we are limited with our I don't think I can injection mold everything. I think I have to 3D print the stuff and just treat it well like we did for our recent Boba Fett release. But That is a genre that I really want to get into soon, and I also recognize that's not necessarily what most people follow us for. So it's more so to expand to a new market rather than to cater to our current customer base. But yeah, I mean, Star Wars and military are two of my favorite genres. as far as like, you know, doing custom Lego, but we definitely want to expand into different genres given the production capabilities that we'll get with the pad printer.
Yeah, that's great. No, I mean, like, Star Wars will always be the bread and butter, but there's no reason you
Try
can't
other things.
start doing.
And
Yeah, yeah. And pad
that's
printing.
why I named the brand AV
No, continue.
Figures instead of like AV Clones. Because we can do all sorts of figures.
Do you think you would ever expand into injection molding yourself, or that's something you think is best outsourced for now?
For now, best outsourced, but I
Ooh.
sooner rather than later I'd like to do it. You know, like I every time I look at Brick Arms, he's like the holy grail of injection molding. Universally accepted as like the highest quality injection molded stuff on the market. Will's a genius. And you know, me and my team member, NanoRex, he's the guy who designed the Boba Fett we just released. He was like, dude, imagine if we could design something, CNC mill it, and injection mold it all in one day. Because we saw like a series of posts that Will put on his story. He's like testing this today, and then a couple hours later, injection molded prototype. Like, bro, that's crazy.
He's living the dream. He just goes into the workshop, churns it out, kicks back. It's
Yeah,
great.
and
It's wealth is great.
I have some experience with calibrating machines, and calibrating a CNC mill to be to have like Will's level of precision, and then also having it be consistent and creating really high quality blasters out of it. Like that is so much work, that I can't even fathom like what the troubleshooting process is like. So well, I mean, for our plans eventually would be to have they have like desktop and benchtop injection molders, which supposedly are not as complicated to operate as a CNC machine. And ideally what we would do is we would outsource the mold making, and then because I really really do not want to take the time to calibrate a CNC machine. But we'd outsource the mold making and we'd handle the injection in-house. And while the mold making is expensive, there are, if you do the mold design, it's a lot cheaper because a lot of the cost of the tooling actually comes from just the fact that they have to design it really well so that it flows.
Yeah, take your part and then make it usable in the
Yeah, so
mold.
that's something that we look to expand to, but honestly, I don't see that happening until like late next year at earliest.
Hey, that's not too far
Yeah,
off.
so it's really not that bad.
I wish you luck with that. And that setup sounds relatively similar to what Citizen Brick has
Yeah.
going as they've expanded into it. They got like a desktop one. Maybe they have a few that they run,
And
but
their stuff's really good.
not. Yeah, no, it comes out top notch. Yeah, it's exciting to see people expand into those sort of scenes. We're kind of just going all over the place. We're running through what we have. Also, do you have, I forgot to ask this in the beginning, do you have to go by a particular time? Because I've noticed we're already an hour in.
Not particularly, no. I just kind of have to be out of
It's
here like
probably.
in the next 2 hours, but I don't think we're going to be going for that long.
Yeah, it's not, this isn't a 3 hour podcast. So I was lurking through on your Discord a bit, and I saw CSGO skins as decals getting mentioned. Can you walk me through and that and tell me more about
Yeah.
it?
Our lead designer, Darren, or BZK Bricks, he's a big fan of CS:GO and games and stuff in general. And last summer he had this idea where it was like, yo, what if we did like CS:GO skins as you know, decals, but not in the traditional sense. We're like in our we had an auction in like 2020, where I made like the Asimov skin, on a clone trooper. I didn't make it. One of our other team members, Adrian, designed it. And I think that color scheme and that design translates really well to clone armor.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, but there are a lot of CS:GO skins, or Counter-Strike skins in general. I'm just saying CS:GO as a general term, but there's a lot of Counter-Strike skins that look really good, and you can easily put it on a clone just as easily as you can put it on a gun. So we were thinking like, okay, well, we could do a bunch of CS:GO designs as like standalone things, but I think it would be cooler to do it in a similar format to how Counter-Strike does their loot boxes. So let's say I have five skins. And there are different tiers. There's like common, rare, epic, legendary, and then I think there's like another tier above that.
Exotic. I don't think they call it
There's
exotic,
like
but
one, there's
maybe
one,
that's.
there's even one that they call like contraband, where like they weren't supposed to release a design, but like a couple of them got onto the wild.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna do any contraband stuff, but like, you know, they have drop rates obviously in their boxes, and while you can technically buy an unlimited amount of boxes, you only have a certain amount of chance to get something. So what we were thinking of doing was having a limited amount, let's say 1,000 decals, and we'd have like maybe 15 to 20 different designs. The rarity of these designs would depend on the rarity of the skin. Or, you know, if it's a legendary skin with like a 1% drop rate, then only 10 out of the 1,000 decals will have that. And if you buy one of the 1,000 decals, you have a 1% chance of getting it. Something like that. I don't know if my math is going good or not.
Yeah, no, I follow
But
though.
yeah, so our idea was to get a whole bunch of popular Counter-Strike skins, put them onto clone bodies. And you know, not just like slapping them haphazardly. We want to make them look good and stuff. And then releasing it as, you know, kind of like a loot box thing. I also do understand that like loot boxes are kind of a touchy topic, especially for collectors, because like you really want an item. It's a physical item, and you're spending some money to get it. And if if you don't get the one that you want, it's not that much different from gambling. We recently dropped what we call the Sakura Legion, which is like a bunch of clones that are based off of Japanese cherry blossoms.
They look
Thank you.
beautiful.
Originally, I was going to release it as just like a loot box style thing. It's like a mystery thing. You buy one, you can get randomly one out of six designs. People were really pissed about it. They left some very colorful feedback about it. And you know, we're the type of brand who listens and takes feedback seriously. So like, okay, we'll have these available as standalone items as well, for you know, a little bit more expensive. But you know, the loot box was intended to be like you get it for cheaper, but it's random. But you can also pay, but we gave them the option. You can pay standard price, but you can choose which one you get. I don't necessarily want to do that for the Counter-Strike decals that we do, because the entire idea behind it is that we're modeling it off of, you know, like an in-game system. But you know, I'm definitely going to be, you know, taking some feedback and seeing how the community feels about it. But that is something, that is the kind of route that we were thinking of taking. Which is like a really fun collecting aspect, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I certainly see why it is a touchy subject, because if there's a really badass design that you want, you're certainly gonna want it no matter what. And it'd be easier to just, get it without having to deal with drop rates. But I can't believe I haven't really sort of seen that mimicked previously with any other custom brands. So I think it would be a niche kind of fun experience to experiment with that. I would certainly buy them just for the novelty of that. And then I'll have to find somebody to commission to decal it for me, because I ain't gonna do that,
Yeah,
but
it decaling is tough. I won't lie. Like sometimes I have to decal the products, you know, so I can show it off before I release it. And like I'll sit there and I'll just kind of stare at the decal sheet for 5 minutes. I'm like, you know, I had a great time designing this, but now I have to actually apply it. But you know, once you get into the flow of it, it's actually really fun. It's just like you said, like there's that mental barrier of just like busting out the decal sheet and just doing it.
I still gotta find, I might even pick up the Sakura flowers, because those looked so nice. I don't know if they're still
Oh yeah,
available, hopefully,
they'll be
but
available for a while.
the sugar skull design you had created too really had me on the verge of finding somebody that could
Ooh.
commission that for me, because that came out incredible.
Yeah.
I really do like a lot of the designs you've tackled, which sort of use the clone more as a canvas than a physical representation of, oh, this is a trooper from this legion. And that was something I was first really exposed to from Hoodie Studios' work,
Ah.
as I'm sure you're
Oh
familiar with
yeah,
them.
legendary.
Absolutely. Griff's work was so incredible, and it's amazing to see, and I'm almost envious in a way that his the medium he has through the Star Wars figures like that lends itself so well to that, because I'm more interested in military, it's difficult to make a military figure that's going to be like, oh, this is a galaxy, like that's like crazy.
Yeah, right?
But it's really exciting to see a lot of people take something that has a bit more of this blank canvas element to it and just push it to the limits.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite part of the job, honestly, like the design work, especially when you can take a canvas and you can be inspired by a piece of art or by a concept or something and make it into a hybrid of two things that you like a lot. And it, like you said, it is harder to do that for military stuff because, you know, it's kind of easier for guns than it is for uniforms.
Certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if I were to put like 501st stripes on a Cry G4 combat suit, I don't think that would look good. but you know, if I were to put multicam on clone armor, that'd look great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's just something unique about the form. Mm-hmm. It allows for that kind of
definitely
stuff. Speaking of Griff, he actually sent in a question from the poll on Instagram. Ooh. So we might as well tackle that.
Yeah.
Now. Shout out to you, Griff. He asked a very basic question, but one I'm sure many people would want to know, especially if they are fans of yours. Who is your favorite clone and why?
Oh, ARC Trooper Fives, hands down. For those of you who haven't seen the Clone Wars, ARC Troopers are selected out from regular clone troopers because they're more creative and they can do like more active problem solving and they have a different combat style. ARC Trooper Fives in particular was very big on being unique, which as a kid, it really inspired me that out of a face of millions of people who look just like you, you can still stand out. And you know, individuality was always like a really big thing for me as growing up. So seeing this clone who's literally a carbon copy of himself,
yeah,
you know, like fight for the fact that he's not just another number and that he is an individual person and that he values other people as individuals. That really struck a chord with me. So that's why Fives is my favorite. Always has been, always will be.
I wasn't expecting such a deep answer. That's really great.
I mean, alternatively, I could just say Rex because he's badass. But,
right.
Even though Fives is a pretty like mainstream, like popular clone or like favorite clone, so to speak, like that's my reasoning for it, and I really like it.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm glad I asked. Actually, what's one of your favorite decals that you have designed?
Ooh. Honestly, okay, if we're talking about like products that I've released,
yeah, we could expand it to more so.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think though, like, probably our recent Shogatsu Trooper, it was like a New Year Trooper that we made. That one was like a really vibrant design. And so I would say that's probably my favorite one that I've made so far, for public release. But
okay.
I do have a really like back in my Flickr days, I decaled over a resin casted and painted set of a Dead Space the Dead Space guy. I'm not familiar with the Dead Space genre. I just really liked the armor and the resin cast that that Giovanni had released back in the day, and I decaled digital camo over the painted resin cast, which really kind of like bridged like different customizing styles, which I thought was great. And that one is probably my favorite decal that I've done, like just over the course of the years.
That actually sounds really exciting. I'll track a photo of that down, and it'll be in the wrap up post. But
yeah, if you have trouble finding it, I'll send you a link.
All right, we're at the end here, moving on into resign. I don't even know what my show is at this point. It was immediately thrown off that it's not Copper Drop, but here we go. Had a fight to not just instinctively be like, all right, now we're here, Copper Drop. First item up here, we have Kashyyyk clone scout trooper, is that something you would consider creating here soon?
Absolutely. Not only is it a canon design, which, you know, I would endeavor to make all the canon designs eventually, but we're trying to work on it so that it could be released sometime this summer.
Okay, awesome. Well, there you go. Next up here, from one of your original auctions, you created a series of decaled figures based on elemental, just like elements. They were called the elementals. Mm-hmm. Is that something you would consider visiting again as a concept and making like a version 2 of?
Absolutely. I really should follow up with him on this. A while ago, Minifigure Dreams, who is an auctioneer, he sent over a couple of these
Trans-clear
bodies. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And so I was like, yo, these are perfect for the Elementals V2. Just haven't gotten around to making the designs yet, but I wanted to UV print on them. And, you know, I wanted to make a set for him and a set for myself and then maybe a set for auctioning just to sell off, because these ones would be super unique. But more than that, at some point I would also like to make it like an elemental, I guess, like Legion, for lack of a better term, and just have a bunch of various clone designs that could be available, like, you know, as an evergreen item, meaning like they stay on the store forever. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's a cool concept that that probably should be in the hands of more people.
That is a really exciting idea to have all those trans clear figures printed up.
Yeah.
Huge shout out to Nick from Minifigure Dreams. He's a great guy.
I really should follow up with him on that though, because I was supposed to do that like last year. I feel really bad now. Oh.
It's how it goes. All right. Final idea up here. Something I was considering recently is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with MMCB's cloth wraparound, just they produced a bunch of historical garbs for your soldiers. Something in that style that just fully wraps around, you could fit through the armholes and stuff like that, attaches on the neck for like Jedi robes or stuff like that. How do you feel about an idea like that?
I definitely want to do it. We kind of already have it. There's a clone named Commander Keller who wears what looks like Jedi robes underneath, like right over his clone armor. And we have a cloth set for that. And I've seen other people do it, and I've been wanting to do it for a while. But before we tackle Jedi cloth, NanoRex and I are working on a line of Jedi products where like you can make a generic Jedi, you can make specific Jedi. There would be Jedi attachments that you would see, like different belts, different pouches that they go on their belt, and then finally different lightsabers. Ideally, we would just have like a big Jedi themed release. So you'd have decals, you have prints, you'd have the cloth as well that you mentioned, and some lightsabers too to go with it.
Would those, you were mentioning like pouches for belts and stuff, would those be resin printed?
No, I think if anything, they would be decal designed, but I'm not opposed to doing resin printed stuff. On that note, actually, you'll notice there's like various like styles of customizing where there are people who will sculpt onto a figure, or they'll glue 3D prints onto the figure. And then there are also people who will modify the base figure and do sculpting and painting on that. And then there are people who would just decal onto the parts. So there's all sorts of different customizing methods in between. But at some point, I'd like us as a company to be able to cater toward all of those crowds where you can have resin printed accessories like those Jedi pouches and stuff to add the 3D element. Some people like it, some people don't. But that's something that we'd like to expand into soon. Or I guess rather than soon, at some point.
That's right. Not holding you to anything. This is not right. No, yeah, that sounds great to have a full sort of release like that. Mm-hmm. With all these sort of Star Wars companies I see, not many of them tackle Jedi stuff, it seems that most of them stick to
clones. Clones are easy to repeat. Yeah. That's probably why. Mm-hmm. Jedi are a little harder, especially because like once you buy an Anakin, you don't need two. But once you buy a clone, you could buy more.
That makes a lot of sense too. All right, then. We're at the end. thank you so much, Andrew, for joining me. It was great getting to talk to you. Do you have any final thoughts or words for the audience?
Not particularly, no, other than just stay tuned for all the cool stuff that we're going to release. And, you know, don't bicker too much.
Yeah. Try not to bicker.
Yeah.
Better. It's easier said than done, but.
Okay. Yeah. Agreed.
All right. Thank you, man. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed. And the fact that you're hearing this right now kind of gives me an indicator that you did. And if that's the case, please consider supporting the podcast by simply following us on Instagram, sharing the podcast with a friend, or leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple. That's about all. I didn't address this in the beginning, but I just want to say that I'm sorry for the delay on uploading this episode. I'm not even sure how many weeks it's past due at this point, and I don't really have much of an excuse. I had some issues uploading it the first time, like when it was initially scheduled to upload, and after I kind of missed that deadline, it sort of sent me into a free fall. I'm not entirely sure how much the podcast contributed to it, but alongside that, I kind of just got into a depressive funk. I don't even want to get into this. Like, I don't say this all for sympathy or something like that. But yeah, past couple weeks, it's just kind of been a mess, but I'm clawing my way out of that. I'm getting back into the swing of things. Thanks for all the support. I do realize that so many people, a lot of y'all reached out. And we're showing your appreciation for the podcast. And yeah, it means a lot. Thank you guys. I hope to have some more podcasts coming out soon. But quite honestly, if I'm just going to be real, it's I feel super, super burnt out. And I think that little bit of a break kind of revealed that to me as well. So we'll see how it goes. But there will be another episode out in 2 weeks. And then I'll start recording more episodes from there. It even feels weird just to be talking again back into the mic. It's really been a hiatus, but all right. Thanks, y'all. I'll see you guys soon.